Bach didn't write for the guitar, but so many of the things that he did write for other instruments sound fantastic on the guitar, especially in the hands of the right guitarist. And our guitarist for this edition of University of the Air is Javier Calderon. I'm Norman Gilliland. This is University of the Air. Javier Calderon is the professor of guitar at the UW-Madison, and he's had some remarkable experiences, not with just the guitar, but also with the guitarist. Welcome to University of the Air.
Thank you, Norman. It's a pleasure to be here.
Student of Andre Segovia. You don't get a much better credential than that, do you?
Well, yeah, I was one of the chosen ones to study with the... At the time, he was the maestro of the,
well,
in the guitar
probably,
world.
Probably the most famous guitarist, don't you think?
Probably up to this day, there has not been a name as well-known as Segovia was.
Mm-hmm. And now you're from Bolivia.
Yes, I was born in Bolivia.
Where there must have been lots and lots of guitar music of all kinds. But what did you grow up listening to?
Actually not. So that's
really?
What everybody would think. But... there was not a, well, the guitar playing is everywhere in the world, but classical guitar was just as rare there as probably anywhere else. It's much more popular these days. In those days, when I was a child or an adolescent, the guitar was not a recognized musical instrument. There was no guitar teacher at the conservatory. And very few people played it. I learned it taking lessons from a Spanish guitarist who had migrated to Bolivia.
It's interesting how long the guitar has been or was a sort of an unacknowledged instrument of classical music. I mean, you go all the way back to the early 19th century, you have Fernando Sor, for example, who really had trouble getting his foot in the door as a serious composer because he was a guitar composer.
Right. Yes, and the development in the last 40-50 years has been just incredible, I would say. There must be a 5,000% increase of guitarists, music, and everything since I was a child to these days. It really was, people don't remember those days, but the guitar was not considered a classical musical instrument.
No, it was certainly out there in, of course, other formats as a rock and roll instrument in the electric phase, and pre-electric very much as a popular instrument, a folk instrument.
Right. I remember when I came to this country very young. I was in high school, and I wanted to study guitar music. I was also a cellist. I was trying to decide between the two of them, but there were only, I think, at most half a dozen schools where there was a possibility of getting a degree in guitar. And I went to one of them, the North Carolina School of the Arts. And from, take it back a few decades later and now, there's hardly a school that does not have a guitar program or a guitar degree.
Well, it has some serious advantages, doesn't it, over other instruments, many other instruments. It's more portable than some of them. And correct me if I'm wrong, but you don't have to have, there's no great advantage in having a 300-year-old guitar.
That's right. Yeah, most of the guitars today are made today. Yeah, it has many advantages. It's easy to put in a closet and keep it stored. And it's a relatively inexpensive instrument. It's very portable, and it plays practically every type of music. There is hardly a genre of music, whether it's electric, rock and roll, folk music, classical, flamenco, where the guitar has jazz, and
sure,
where the guitar is used in every single one of all the musical genres that we have.
How did you come to study with Andre Segovia?
He was also something that fell on my lap. I had come to this country when I was 17 or 18 years old in high school, and I went to a music camp in Brevard, North Carolina, And they were auditioning students during the summer, and the School of the Arts of North Carolina was going to have a guitar program, and they were auditioning students right there at the music camp, and I inquired a little bit about it. I was mostly into cello then. And they had on the list that Segovia was going to be a guest visiting artist that year. And, of course, that caught my eye immediately. And I auditioned, and I got a scholarship. I passed the audition. And that's how I got to know Segovia. And went to the School of the Arts. I stayed in this country, which I was not planning to do. I just stayed. And later on, after I knew Segovia, I had a scholarship to go to Santiago de Compostela, to Spain, to study with him. So one thing led to the other. So,
how long did you study with Segovia?
I would say quite a few times, but sporadically, because he did not teach anywhere regularly. At the School of the Arts, he was just visiting, and he came on occasion to give master classes. In Spain, it was the same thing, master classes and a few lessons here and there. So over a period of years, I got quite a few lessons, and I went to a few master classes with him.
What did you learn from Segovia?
Yeah, I would say more than anything else, and at the top of my list, I would put inspiration. It was to be with a towering figure, it was very inspiring. And probably I think musicianship. I think many guitarists today, or many musicians today, forget about the importance of interpretation and musicianship. And Segovia, that is what he taught, musicianship and interpretation. He rarely or ever got into the technique of playing the instrument. He was always emphasizing interpretation and music and listening and phrasing.
So you were on your own in terms of figuring out how to create some of these technical effects?
Well, no. While I was at the School of the Arts, it happened to be that the guitar professor at the School of the Arts was Mr. Jesus Silva, a Mexican national guitarist who had studied with Segovia and with Manuel Ponce. So I studied with a guitarist. It was with Jesus Silva, was my guitar teacher.
You've recorded, over the course of some years, quite a variety of guitar music, and of course most of it was not originally written for the guitar.
Right.
But so much of it sounds so good on the guitar, and you played a bit of Bach for us at the beginning, and you have a Bach CD that you did some years ago, and transcriptions of violin pieces,
right,
and maybe some keyboard mm-hmm. pieces too. But what would be some of the techniques we'd listen to if we hear a movement, say, from one of the Bach violin sonatas? What are some of the guitar techniques that we'd be hearing?
Nothing in Bach, in the music of Bach, nothing too out of the ordinary. It's pretty much transcribed straight, almost from the, and they are transcriptions mostly from the lute. He did not write for the guitar, but he wrote for the guitar of his days, which was the lute. So from the lute to the guitar, there is not a whole lot of transcribing to do. It's actually transcribing is the word to use, because later on, when I arrange pieces from the piano, let's say Schubert or Albéniz. Those are now, rather than transcriptions, I would like to call them arrangements, because
sure,
you have to revoice and you have to adapt what the guitar can do to play that type of music. But from the suites for lute, it goes pretty much note by note. And the lute was so close to the guitar, it's almost like the piano. He didn't write for the piano, but he wrote for the keyboard,
right,
and he didn't write for the cello, he wrote for the viola da gamba. So it's that close when we say the Bach music for the guitar.
Would that be true of, and we'll hear a guitar example in a minute. I mean, a lute piece transcribed for guitar.
Mm-hmm.
But of the violin sonata.
Yeah, that also the fugue. This one I play is an arrangement that I did from the violin sonata. However, the same piece, almost note by note, and he actually it's a 2 measures longer, is the same as the fugue for lute.
That's convenient.
So there is a fugue for lute that is almost like exactly like the, not exactly the same, but very close to the violin sonata fugue.
So this is what it sounds like. This is the fugue from the violin sonata by Bach, played by Javier Calderón.
Thank you.
was the fugue from the solo violin sonata by Bach, from one of those sonatas, played by guitarist Javier Calderon. And what do you exchange for what when you play the guitar version of this instead of the violin? What can you do that the violin can't do, and what can't you do that the violin can?
The bass notes, which are implied in the violin, somehow a score, but you can tell almost what some of the harmonies are. So the violin is a little bit simplified version of the guitar score. So, yeah, the guitar can, one of the things is it can do more harmony than a violin, sure, or a cello.
Let's hear one more from Bach, and this is a piece we mentioned, one of the lute suites, and he wrote several of those, and rarely do you hear them played on the lute. They seem to be the stuff of guitar playing now, these several suites by Bach, and this is a gigue from one of them. One of those performances that actually sounds, I have to listen to it fairly carefully to determine if it's one or two guitars, Javier, because there's so many notes, so much going on there.
Yeah, it's a very difficult, the counter, Bach is very difficult. It doesn't sound sometimes so difficult, but there is a counterpoint going on that is extreme. You have to spend many hours figuring out how to do it and then polish it up so that you can do it.
We're going to go into the 19th and early 20th century with some completely different sorts of works for a guitar when we return in a moment. This is University of the Air. I'm Norman Gilliland, back with Javier Calderon, who is a professor of guitar at the UW-Madison and has recorded quite a wide variety of repertoire, not of the guitar originally, but quite a bit of things that have been adapted over the years for the guitar, and some of which he has done the adaptations himself. And you mentioned the piano earlier, Javier.
Mm-hmm.
Franz Schubert, we don't think of as a guitar composer. We think of him as, when it comes to his solo works, purely a pianistic composer. Does that pose extra challenges for a guitarist?
Yes, because arranging piano music for the guitar is more difficult than arranging violin or cello music to the guitar. And in one, you have to add a little bit of harmonies to make it sound more rich. But on the piano, actually, the piano can do so much that you actually have to reduce instead and rearrange the voicing. And that's a different challenge. Also, the keys, the pieces are written for the piano, are more difficult than the string, you know, typical string keys, G, D.
A.
But yeah, I thought of Schubert because I knew that Schubert had at one time or during some part of his life played guitar, and I listened many of his music, which I always loved, and I thought some of these pieces would sound wonderful on the guitar, and I took the job to find the music and then try to arrange them for the guitar. And at one point, I made a trip to Vienna to visit the Geborenhaus. The Schubert Geborenhaus is the birthplace and the place where he had lived. And I saw over there the couple of guitars that he had in his life. And, of course, that was for me the moment. I took pictures, all the pictures I could of his guitars. And when I transcribed them, I also was thinking that sometimes I was told that, or I read that he did not have always a piano available for him, and that some of his piano music he did using his guitar.
That's a new one.
Like a lot of musicians in his days, he had a difficulty making ends meet, and he was poor friends. He was not always able to use a piano for writing his music, so he used the guitar, and all that inspired me.
So if we listen to one of these piano pieces by Schubert, one of these musical moments, Moment Musico, what are some of the things that we should listen for that require a certain amount of guitar technique, or you might even call them special effects that somehow condense what the keyboard can do?
I will have to look at the score to see how some voices were arranged. But, for example, this figure that he uses in this piece, it's very difficult to do it on a guitar. There are several ways to do it. One would be to play that ornament in three strings, just, but then you have the problem of coming back to play the next chord, so I did a little bit of compromising there and doing a slur and then plucking a note instead of doing the playing it on different strings, which you have to stretch the hand to reach that. But then it's very difficult to come back to the next chord.
So we'll be listening for some of those effects.
Yes.
In this transcription?
Right. This one I would call an arrangement.
An arrangement. That's one step past transcription.
One time we got into a discussion, what is a transcription and what is an arrangement? And we were talking about that transcriptions probably is better suited for saying that you did transcribe it note by note. But arranging, it's quite more difficult. It's more art. You decompose and you recompose the piece for the instrument. That's when I think an arrangement is a bigger job than transcribing.
And here's a familiar musical moment by Franz Schubert as arranged by Javier Calderon and performed by him. I gather, Javier, part of the challenge in changing piano music into guitar music is that the piano has, you know, these 88 notes to work with, and the guitar has a somewhat more limited range. So you have to do some condensation.
Yeah, compressing the chords, and it has pedals.
Well, that's true.
Whereas
yeah,
the guitar, so to hold a note, you have to hold the finger on the string, and that probably has makes it much more difficult to play legato. And you know,
so how do you get a sustain on a guitar?
Well, you have to hold the note just on the finger. Because if you don't, as the very second or a split second that you hold, you take the finger off the string, the sound dies. And it's very hard to hold the fingers, to hold the harmonies.
I'm just kind of trying to imagine what it would sound like. Something that uses a lot of pedal, you know, an impressionistic piece, Debussy maybe, would that be particularly hard to play?
Oh, yeah. So there's just probably 3/4 of the piano repertoire is just impossible to be played on the guitar. Beethoven is almost impossible, and Chopin is extremely difficult, and Debussy. There are some composers you just don't play on the guitar because it loses way too much. And there are composers that transcribe very well, anything by Bach or Haydn, Mozart transcribes very well. And there are some composers, one of which is Albéniz or Enrique Granados, who actually, it gets better. They say that the transcriptions are better than the originals.
Now, is that in part because, I mean, I've heard this, that, and it seems to ring true, in the case of Granados and Albéniz, these late 19th, very early 20th century composers, they wrote everything for the piano, but the piano pieces they wrote were inspired by guitar music in the first place.
Correct. And and the Spanish rasgado music, and the joke is said that they spend their life trying to write guitar music for the piano. Yeah, in some way it's true, because the type of harmonies and the type of arpeggios that they use are better suited for the guitar than for the piano. And Albéniz definitely is one of them. I would say, if you want me to just do a quick doing this figure. That is probably easier to do on the guitar than on the piano, or it can be done in several ways. Things of this sort are very what we call guitaristic.
your hand in that case didn't have to move very much. The fingers were reaching
it's
from
right
a
on
central
the,
position.
Right on the where you do guitar chords.
This piece by Albéniz that you've recorded, Torre Bermeja, what does that mean?
It's an interesting name. The transcription would be, the translation would be Scarlet Tower. Now, why does this, most of his pieces have the names of either the provinces or the cities where there is a typical dance. But they say that it refers to an Arabic or Moorish tower in southern Spain, that it was a scarlet tower. That's the translation of Torre Bermeja.
And what sort of things should we be listening for when we hear this?
Well, this piece uses a lot of guitar effects, everything from harmonics, pizzicatos, arpeggios, rasgueados. So it pretty much is the whole thing there.
How do you get the harmonics?
The harmonics on the string instruments are done by pressing very lightly on the string and in certain spots. So you have to, the trick of doing a harmonic is aiming at the correct spot, you know, there. That would be.
So you can do it on any fret?
There are two harms of harmonics. Well, these are the natural harmonics. And then there are the artificial harmonics, which you have to do helping at the correct place with the left hand. Now, of course, we also do combinations of chords with when one of the notes is harmonic and the others are not.
And how does that sound?
Well, that was the spot I just played. The bottom notes are not harmonic here, just the melody.
So listen for some of those harmonics and many other effects in Torre Bermeja, The Red Tower by Albéniz. Mm-hmm. Are you using different parts of the string to pluck?
Yeah, to get different effects? The timbres or different sounds help very much to make a piece more interesting, which is they say that guitar actually can orchestrate some of the music. You can play the very same phrase with different sounds, where, or with a harpsichord. So. So, yeah, the use of vibrato in some notes, or play very dry. Gives an extra way to make the music much richer.
We'll go forward into the 20th century, and I'm sure we'll hear some more effects still when we return with the Art of the Guitar in a moment. This is University of the Air. I'm Norman Gilliland, back with Javier Calderon, and we're talking about the Art of the Guitar. We've looked at transcriptions from 18th century composers, Bach in particular, and we've looked at composers from the late 19th, early 20th centuries, including Albanus. Oh, I shouldn't leave out Schubert with some rather difficult transcriptions or arrangements from his original piano pieces. And then some pieces that were written for piano but reminiscent of the guitar, which, as you can imagine, slide over pretty nicely into the guitar. And then we get into a composer, Manuel Ponce, the Mexican composer, who was fairly diverse in what he wrote, but he did write a fair amount of guitar music, too.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And what makes him different? What new ground does he break?
Ponce is among the first modern composers to have written extensively for the guitar. He met Andrés Segovia when he was a young man, and Segovia encouraged him to write pieces for the guitar. So Aldo Ponce never played the guitar. He wrote quite a few number of pieces for Segovia, which became part of the guitar repertoire. Concertos and suites and sonatas. The interesting thing about Ponce is that he was kind of a chameleon composer. He had a Manuel Ponce style, which is a sort of impressionistic. He studied with Paul Duca in Paris. But many of the pieces he wrote for the guitar were in styles that were copies of other composers, like the Ponce, or like the suite in A minor, is written supposedly in the style of a Baroque composer, lutenist, who was Silvius Leopold Weiss, and he used to, with Segovia, some arrangement that they had, published and record the pieces under the names of other composers.
Oh, really?
Yes. And, an old trick. And it was after many years that, that Segovia revealed that the pieces were not written by Silvius Leopold Weiss or Scarlatti or Franz Schubert, that they were Manuel Ponce had written these pieces for many years. He went that Segovia had discovered these pieces.
That's exactly what Fritz Kreisler did. Was doing
exactly.
About the same time, yeah.
And they say that Fritz Kreisler, because they knew each other, had asked one time Segovia and asked him, where did you find these pieces? And Segovia had an answer to Fritz Kreisler, from the same place you found your pieces.
So that means that these are, similar to Bach in terms of their demands on the instrument, or are they a little more progressive?
Yeah, the form is Baroque, but the harmonies, it's very revealing. I don't know how anybody believed it, but this jig from the suite is almost, I will call it, almost in a Mendelssohn style.
So here it is. This is the Gigue from the suite In the Style of Weiss by Ponce. That was the Gigue from the suite In the Style of Sylvius Leopold Weiss, a Baroque composer, but the suite actually written by Manuel Ponce, the 20th century Mexican composer. Alan Hovhaness actually wrote a guitar concerto for you, didn't he, Javier?
Yes, I don't know how it happened, but when I was very young, still a student in North Carolina, I was double majoring in cello and guitar. And one time we did a world premiere of a ballet that written by Alan Hovhaness, and I was playing in the cello section with the ballet of the school and the orchestra. And there were some pieces in that ballet. The name of the piece was A Rose for Miss Emily. And I was thinking back already then, this would sound so wonderful on the guitar. Maybe one day he will write a piece for the guitar, and I thought. And then a few years later, I decided maybe I will contact Jovanes and I'll ask him if he could write a guitar concerto. there isn't any. And I did write him, and I made contact with him, and he agreed with it. He says, you know, he told me, I always write a guitar concerto, but I don't know for whom or how. So I said, well, I did get some commission and the way how we would premiere it, and contacted some orchestras, it was with the Minnesota Orchestra and Leonard Slatkin that we decided, yeah, let's do a guitar concerto and we'll do the premiere. And so he did write a concerto and we premiered it with the Minnesota Orchestra a long time ago by Alan Jovanes. And I used to go to his home in Seattle, Washington, and explain him how the concerto would work and try different things. And he was a very nice man, a very, I would say, humble in some ways. It seemed to me he was very agreeable to everything I suggested. And we did the premiere, and I think it's one of the best guitar concertos, contemporary guitar concertos there is, written by an American composer. And it may be, if not the first, one of the first American guitar concertos. Now, the interesting thing about this recording is that I premiered it with the Minnesota Orchestra, I did not get to record it. But some years later, after somebody had already recorded the guitar concerto that I premiered, they contacted me from Naxos. I said, would you like to do the other guitar concerto? And I didn't know that he had written some 10 years later another guitar concerto for Narciso Yepes. And he had premiered also, but he died and it was never recorded. So I did the recording of the second guitar concerto. I did it with the Royal Scottish Philharmonic. And that was quite an experience. I learned how the Royal Scottish Philharmonic does their recordings. We prepared for the recording and they said, we will have one rehearsal and we will record it.
Oh, really?
Yes, and actually it happened when I arrived there, we don't have time for a rehearsal. We'll just record it. So we recorded without rehearsing. But they are so good, it sounded like a recording. I was just frightened when they started playing because it sounded like a recording.
Well, here's what it sounded like then. This is the one take recording of a movement from that second guitar concerto of Jovanes. It's the second movement, Allegro, with Javier Calderon and the Royal Scottish National Orchestra. Thank you. second movement of the second guitar concerto by Alan Hovhaannis, as performed by my guest today, Javier Calderon, with the Royal Scottish National Orchestra. One take there, not just for that movement, but for the whole concerto. Thanks for joining me for University of the Air.
Thank you, Norman, and it has been a pleasure visiting with you.
I'm Norman Gilliland, and I hope you can join me next time around for University of the Air.